Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome to KER Politics. We're going to have four great segments today. First segment, we're going to deal a little bit with the COVID, the shots, et cetera, et cetera. I want to introduce what Jimmy's about to say by saying that my friends out here who have gotten boosters have all had very negative reactions to it. Why have they had negative reactions to it? Probably because it's almost worthless. My neighbor, Robbie, actually got incredibly sick the day after he got his booster, incredibly sick with flu-like symptoms. Now, in spite of all of this, the government is still saying that they would like to see infants, and I would put infants in the category, let's say, of newborns to 6 or 7 year olds to get shots. I think that's silly. Jimmy, what do you think?
Yeah, so the FDA just approved shots for 6 months and older. That is in spite of no long-term studies and no factual evidence that shows that those children are at risk. However, there is a large amount of information that shows that children actually have a risk of potential negative reaction, specifically myocarditis for young males. And there's just no real significant issue for children at all. And according to the CDC, over 75% of the youth in this nation have actually had COVID already. So it makes zero sense. And I'm actually just wondering how much influence Pfizer and Moderna, BioNTech, Pfizer and Moderna have over our government, because it's pretty clear the FDA, and we'll wait, see what the CDC's recommendation is, because they actually have to approve this recommendation. But it's pretty clear that they're making decisions on the emergency powers and not based on proper scientific evidentiary proof of long-term studies.
No. Jimmy, a book which I recently read called A Pox Upon Your House basically gave the facts from a medical doctor of the erroneous ways that the government is handling the shot. Apparently, I agree with you 100%. They're really listening to Pfizer, Moderna, and the rest of them. I would very much like to see what the quarterly income statements and balance sheets for those companies look like, all things considered. You got a comment on that?
Well, I think there's no question. They've made billions. I think last year, Pfizer, BioNTech raked in about $85 billion in revenues, mm-hmm. billions of dollars. And of course, the longer people need shots and boosters, the more money they will make. And of course, we know that it's very clear with the variants that people still get the COVID virus regardless. Now, there's some evidence that elderly people actually benefit and avoid hospitalization and death. But let's face it, Anthony Fauci, fully vaccinated and boosted, and guess what? He has COVID right now. So you just see it every day, the hypocrisy, the lies, the unfortunate influence, and the lack of faith that is evolving in our health system and our government institutions being influenced by people like the biotech companies.
Yeah, Anthony Fauci being the highest paid, I guess I'd call him a government employee in the nation, makes more money than any other government employee. I'd like to ask you the following question, Jim, and I'm going to ask it. There's a little play on words. I think it's all about control by the government, the Center for Disease Control, and the FDA. What do you think?
I think that there are people within the government that are really, that in this administration, this regime, that are very focused on retaining power. And they've made it very clear. Anthony Fauci has made it clear, both in public hearings as well in public statements, that they are fighting to continue mask mandates to show who's the boss, who's in charge, that the government and the health authorities still have that responsibility, that elected officials should not be involved in those decisions, that health officials should be. But what we've seen is that the health officials are incompetent, if not complicit in corrupt and potentially damaging issues over and over and over again. So that's why we have a system of democracy. That's why we have a republic, in order to vote out those people that would make decisions authoritarian-wise and then lie to cover up their actions. And that's the unfortunate reality we're facing today. The FDA and, of course, the Pfizer, and they're trying to hide the information, the material that doesn't support their narrative. And, of course, this entire White House staff has been fully behind that type of cover-up, if lack of transparency, and more importantly, actually showing the facts that show incompetence on our government officials.
Jimmy, the obvious question that comes into my mind that I've been thinking about really all week is, how can the Democratic Party use this particular situation to their advantage in the upcoming elections in 22 and 24, in your opinion?
Yeah, so what we saw in 2020 with the virus, with this, quote, pandemic, unquote, that turns out to be basically equivalent to a bad flu season, what we saw was the ability of the Democratic Party to manufacture fear through their media compliant editors and corporations that support their interests in order to change voting procedures and allow mail-in voting, to allow influences that were technically and in many cases illegal in many of these key important districts around the country. So my belief is that they will continue to find reasons and justification to intimidate and use these techniques in order to stop legitimate voting and stop the ability to check on the voter rolls, the ability to check mail-in ballots, the ability to check voter IDs, in order to continue their efforts to basically control power through manipulation of our electoral system.
You know, the movie 10,000 Mules really, really brought that out. There's no question about that. What I would like to know is, why didn't that movie make a bigger impact, although perhaps it has made a huge impact? In the primaries last Tuesday, the Democrats didn't do particularly well. What impact do you think this is all going to have on the real elections in 2022 this year?
Well, I know that in many states, we've talked about it before, many states have come back and fixed a lot of the problems that evolved from the 2020 election. And some of the key states, the Republican-controlled legislators, however, in places like Pennsylvania, where Governor Wolf is the Democratic governor, the legislature attempted to change some of those rules, but he overrode those, vetoed them. We know that there's some weird things that happened in Georgia with Kemp and Raffensperger mm-hmm. in the just recent elections. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to judge what the outcomes will be. And I'll tell you, I just voted here in the primary in South Carolina. I walked in, and I'll tell you, it is very, with the electronic tabulating systems, it's very difficult to find transparency and some sort of record that might, that you can factually see the votes were not manipulated. And that's the unfortunate reality. We are pushing towards electronic voting. We're pushing towards mail-in voting. We're pushing towards, in many places, lack of voter ID, especially in powerful Democratic states like in California, and of course there in Washington and New York, where people are fighting against voter ID.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to have a very difficult time.
Yeah, they are. Jimmy, we got to take a real quick commercial break. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be right back right after the commercial break. We're going to continue this discussion, and we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in Ukraine. Stick around.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back here to talk again a little bit about the COVID situation and how the Democrats are using to that advantage. And then we're going to give some opinions and some facts on what's going on in the Ukraine right now. Jimmy, any final comments right now on the COVID situation?
I do believe that the Americans are just kind of fed up with this continuation of the fear. There are certainly a lot of people, especially in those media-controlled, leftist media-controlled big markets, that still are scared to death. I see it every now and again, someone that's in a group of people and they're wearing a face mask, and you can just see the panic and the fear when someone comes close to them. So I think that technique worked effectively. I'm sure that they're going to attempt that the progressives, the liberals, the people that are attempting to control our system and take away individual choice and freedom, I'm sure they're going to continue to push these agendas, but I don't know how much how effective it will be. I don't know how much of an impact it'll have, because there's so much anger and there's so much frustration about the way we're being managed, and it directly relates to the economy. And, of course, what's happening overseas as well.
You know, I got to tell you, I think it would make it a lot easier for more folks to realize that if they take to heart what Janelle Berland, who we did a daily editorial with on Thursday, had to say about making correct, unbiased decisions. Jimmy, let's switch over to the Ukraine at this point. Strikes me that more European countries are now getting involved on the side of the Ukraine. What are your comments on that?
Well, I don't think there are more that are getting involved. I think they're taking a little bit more proactive role. Still, the problem with Ukraine and Europe is a lack of unity and a lack of clear guidance and strategy to deal with Vladimir Putin and the Ukrainian situation overall. And that is leading to the Russians consolidating some areas in eastern Ukraine, doing a more effective job in managing their combat operations, while the Ukrainians are, you know, still struggling. I mean, they have a much smaller army. They have much fewer resources. The losses that the Russians have been significant. But as I've said in the past, there's absolutely nothing that a dictator is going to listen to from the media or the pressure that will stop him from achieving his objectives.
Right.
The Russian economy, and this is something that I think a lot of people hoped would be different, but the Russian economy is still doing very well. And the primary reason is the lack of oil production in the United States, the lack of energy production around the world, and the OPEC nations kind of saying, you know, blowing off the Biden administration.
Right.
Allows the prices to be sky high. And of course, people are still willing to buy oil from Russia. So there are a lot of countries that are still buying oil and gas from Russia. And some of them necessarily because they were dependent on it, like Germany. They're trying to cut away from it. But there's many other countries that they're still getting those prices. And that's enough to help float them right now. And they could care less about the sanctions. Again, Putin's inner circle, a handful of people. You know, if you're a multi-billionaire, what do you care if someone tries to sanction? You got enough money hidden out to live on. That's not going to affect you. And they're expecting over time that they will be victorious in the long run, because people will forget it. And unfortunately, that's probable. However, the European Union has now granted Ukraine EU candidate status. And as you say, a lot of the leaders, Macron from France, the German Olaf Scholz, I think the Romanian leader, they've all pledged to go visit Ukraine in order to shore up some of those issues. But really, this is a bleeding wound for all sides, and it continues because of lack of leadership, lack of strategy, and a lack of serious pressure to stop the aggression.
Well, I got to tell you, Jimmy, my personal opinion on the Russian situation, on the Russian philosophy, is right now they are in the top three countries as measured by strength, economic, militarily, etc., etc. And if they don't get their way in the Ukraine, they could very easily, certainly psychologically, they could really drop out of the top three most powerful countries in the world. What do you think about that?
Well, the only thing that really keeps the Russian economy is not that powerful. It's really ranked in the like between 8 and 10th, something like that, maybe somewhere between 8 and 15, depending on the year and what oil prices are like, because primary survivability for them is based on energy exports. So their real power, they don't have as much diplomatic influence as they had. They don't have the largest military that they had once had under the Soviet Union, but they do have a large number of nuclear weapons. And that those nuclear weapons are really what makes them a world power. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, the three nations that really are kind of the most, you know, powerful in all factors, China, Russia, the United States. India, though, is gaining ground quite a bit, getting much larger. And then the European Union as a whole is powerful. But again, it's very fractured with a lot of different political agendas. And of course, they're under tremendous pressure for their own internal difficulties to push forward on the issues that really matter for their own long-term security and safety. So that entire globalization effort does there's a negative impact right now because of what Russians have done. I don't think that's a benefit that a lot of people argue, especially on, you know, extreme right or libertarians that say Russia's actually going to save the world. I don't think they intend to do that. I think they intend to take power. But I do think, as you say, that they will continue to suffer losses. Even if they control that eastern corridor, this is going to be very, very expensive for them. And look, the likelihood that they're going to maintain dominance in the energy markets is low, in my view. It's not going to last forever. And their ability to sustain and to hold territory from a very, very strongly nationalistic nation, the Ukrainians, that are now fighting for their lives, it's going to be really tough for the Russians. Really tough for the Russians.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, Jimmy, the thing I don't understand since I've read The Success Lie by Janelle Bruland is I learned how to think a lot clearer on these particular situations. It's very obvious to me that I simply don't understand the rationale behind the fragmentation that we have in Europe. It just really doesn't make any sense. Something else, Jimmy, that makes absolutely no sense to me is, in terms of the Democratic Party, under Trump, we were very definitely, what's the best way to put it, energy self-sufficient. If we were really, truly energy self-sufficient, the bat that we were using to hit the ball that's thrown at us by the Russians would be much, much, much easier to deal with. We could basically just totally disregard the Russians when it comes to the energy situation. And that's something that I don't understand why politicians don't realize that. I know all about nationalism. I know all about globalism. I know all about the fake media, etc., etc., and I still don't get it.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Hope you enjoyed the top of the hour news at all the radio stations that carry our particular show. You know, I want to bring up an interesting question to Jimmy. I really don't understand the rationale behind the Democrats in the United States right now, where at a very difficult time like this, at a time when I'm paying close to $6 a gallon for gasoline here in the Northwest, I don't understand why the Democrats aren't trying to play the heroes and say, we're back to energy self-sufficiency, and look, that's all of the all the credit has to be given to the executive branch and Congress. What's going on, Jim, in your opinion, in that area?
So I think it's a complex question. I think it's a very good question, and it's one that most Americans are probably asking right now. Why can't they solve this, and why can't they, you know, fix this problem, when it's pretty apparent that increasing production and making U.S. independent from oil would actually help in so many areas. But here's my take and my opinion on what's happening inside Washington, D.C. You have an elected leader that apparently 81 million people, at least that's what they say, voted for, who really has no handle on his entire administration. And here's why I believe that's the case. I think there are multiple groups within the Democratic Party and the influencers in Washington that are pushing for their agendas. And one of the most powerful is the climate cult, the people that are pushing carbon, the carbon, anti-carbon mafia, if you will. They're pushing this agenda to shape America to become less carbon dependent. And so I believe they are making the influencers that are making policy decisions, like the energy secretary, Jennifer Granholm, are making comments like, oh, and she did this week, she said this directly, energy companies have got to increase their production short-term and investment in order to help us out. But in 5 to 10 years, they need to be doing something different. Well, you don't do multi-billion dollar investments and then expect to just turn around in 5 or 10 years and lose it. No refineries built in the United States. So that carbon mafia, John Kerry's part of it, and of course a very influential, you know, AOC, a lot of the legislative people, Democrats in Congress, are part of that ideology. And then you've got competing ideologies. You've got the LGBTQ woke policy people that are really pushing social change on America, and they're very influential. Then you've got this group of former Obama foreign policy officials that are trying to go back 8 to 10 years and reestablish policies, foreign policies that the Obama administration tried and failed, but they feel obligated to do it for some reason. And I think those competing agendas are fighting for power, and there's no leadership that actually sorts out to ensure it's protecting the interests of the overall American people, the average American. And that's where the competition's coming. That's why they are not allowing leases on for new oil and gas, or why they're restricting, putting in significant numbers of administrative challenges and hurdles, because they actively and admittedly do not want the United States to be producing more energy over the next 5 to 10 years. And that puts us at a tremendous disadvantage. And that those little fights are clearly being overtaking the media, but also they're overtaking the Democrats' positions on many issues, and I think they're beginning to suffer politically for it.
Let's take it one step farther now. It would appear at this moment in time to any rational thinker that the Democrats are probably going to lose Congress, they're probably going to lose the executive branch if they don't make some changes, because more and more people are starting to realize that the U.S. is headed on a negative path, no question about that. So my question to you is, why aren't more Democrats coming out and agreeing with the obvious and saying, this is where I stand on this, and it's going to get our country back into really good shape? Why aren't more candidates doing that, Jimmy? Let me just ask one more question. Sure. It would appear that Mitch McConnell seems to be giving the Democrats a fair amount of strength right now.
Yeah, it is apparent. John Cornyn from Texas, the senator that's negotiating this gun control measure. What's happening is, in my view, the Democrats, they have control of the vast majority of corporate media. So they respond, as do many people in Washington, to what the Washington Post and the New York Times writes on a daily basis. So the Democrats have to maintain unity, and they're very good at that because their basic philosophy is kind of a unified view of more government, more control, and someone will save us. And so stepping away from that is very risky for them. Conservatives, on the other hand, are completely the opposite. You have people like Rand Paul, you have Ted Cruz, you have Donald Trump, you have people that like individual rights and liberties in the Constitution should override that collective mentality. Sometimes that separates them out, makes them, you know, like one on, you know, like a single-handed fight. And the Democrats know that they have strength in unity with a lot of people. So that's why they don't step away. And the reason why is people like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer have such a tremendous hold on the resources for their reelection that they will have to bow down to them. And if they step out of line, they know they get crushed. My thought is they're going to be crushed. It's going to show the weakness of the Democratic Party because of this internal fight between these multiple factions that are really not wide mainstream type ideas. You know, the gender fight. Why are we pushing gender ideologies and transgenderism to youth in schools? Makes no sense for most families in America. Why are they pushing? We know why they're pushing immigration, allowing, you know, masses of illegal immigrants, and that's a long-term effort to change voter rolls. But the foreign policy issues and the gas and the energy issues, people are just like, wait a second, you're crushing my family. And I think most of them don't buy into the rest of this, and they're beginning to step away from it. And you're seeing it. You're seeing it in the primaries. You're seeing much less excitement, much lower turnout from Democrats in the primaries. And the economy is really driving it.
The economy is. There's no question about that. We're going to get back into that in the final segment of the show, by the way, you guys. But I got to tell you, it makes no sense to me where somebody who vows, if they're elected, to protect the interests of the United States, and that includes a lot of Democrats, why don't they say what they really believe? Why doesn't Jeff Bezos, for example, realize that in any other country, he probably wouldn't have gotten as far as he's gotten in terms of his business? Why doesn't Bill Gates, who has to be a pretty intelligent guy, why doesn't he realize the same thing, Jim? I really don't get it. We got a minute left.
Well, they have their own interests. And as from your first position of why does somebody get elected and not follow up with the things he says to normalize and to protect the average person. I'll tell you why Joe Biden is that way. He's always been that way. He has been proven over and over and over again to lie, to make public statements that are absolutely false about himself, and he's willing to do anything to get elected. And of course, that's, you know, plagiarism got him pushed out in 1988. And there's been just numerous instances since then where he's pushed the same buttons. And for the other people, they just don't understand. They've got their own interests and their own financial interests, and they feel they can buy their way out of this, and they won't suffer the consequences.
They definitely suffer the consequences. Ladies and gentlemen, we got another commercial break. We're going to be right back to wrap up the show. Welcome back here to wrap up KER Politics. Going to talk a little bit about some of the candidates, some of the Republican candidates, just briefly here in terms of for the big seat. Obviously, that is the man who's going to sit in the executive office. I would say right now the decision is probably between DeSantis, Trump, and Ted Cruz. Now, the question that I have that I think is really interesting, Jimmy, something that I realize, and that is 111 out of 119 candidates who Trump has supported, those candidates have done very, very well in the elections. Is that going to give Trump a really stronger stance when it comes to who the Republicans are going to run in 24?
Absolutely. I think so. You'll see the media and you'll see some Republicans that will say, hey, look, you know, we've got to go with DeSantis, or we've got to move away from Trump. But these numbers of endorsements and actual victories in primaries are phenomenal. He's at a 94% success rate. That's unheard of in politics. If you're better than 50 or 60%, that's phenomenal. I mean, take a look at how many endorsements for Biden. In fact, many Democrats are not accepting endorsements from Biden because they just don't want to be associated with this government right now. So yes, when you're talking about Trump's influence over the party and his experience, and this is, you know, J.D. Rucker does the Liberty Daily. The Liberty Daily. It's a blog that actually puts. It's very similar to Citizen Free Press. He posts just, you know, headlines, and then you can look at the different articles. But he writes as well, and I actually commented on one of his articles where he said, hey, look, I got to go towards DeSantis. If Trump gets the nomination, of course, I'll support him. But we've got to look at something new. What I argue is Trump probably did not understand the depth of the corruption in Washington, D.C., how bad it really was, how deep the swamp was. And he was absolutely hamstrung by Republicans, both in the Senate and the House and in the executive branch. People like Jim Comey, quote, Republican Jim Comey, Andy McCabe, which is, he's a Democrat, there's no question. But you had officials and government DOJ officials and FBI officials that undermined the administration for the entire time he was in office. You had the intelligence community do that. He understands that a lot better than anybody else right now. And if he makes the right types of selections, and unfortunately he was advised, look, he doesn't pick everybody. He gets recommendations from different groups and organizations. But if he makes the right selections, and I understand, my understanding is he's preparing with some key people to have basically, if you will, almost a shadow government in preparation for if he does run, that he will be able to take the actions in order to set this country back in the right direction. He did an incredible job in those first 3 years, 3.5 years. But that last year with COVID, he depended upon government officials that were absolutely undermining his authority, and he trusted them. That was a mistake. I don't think he would make that mistake again. Now, if you have a DeSantis or a Cruz or a Nikki Haley or a Mike Pompeo probably has a pretty good understanding of it. But some of these other people, they don't have that White House experience. So I think Trump, with that knowledge, with that experience, and with the political power that he wields and the trust and support from a large percentage of the American population, a very large percentage, and very well trusted within the Republican Party, I think he has the advantage. I think he's got the advantage. The downside is his age, and also on occasion when he, you know, makes decisions and puts people in place based on ego or recommendations that actually undermine him. But I think he is the most influential and powerful guy out there. It's pretty clear that that's the case. And in spite of the media attacks and trying to undermine a couple of the losses, he's undermined him with a couple of losses. I think it's a completely different game than what's been what happened in 2015-16 and actually what happened in 2019 and 2020.
Jim, we've talked about Ron DeSantis. We've talked about Trump. We've talked about Ted Cruz. We really haven't talked very much over the past few months about Nikki Haley. Give me an opinion on her, would you?
So Nikki Haley, she was governor of South Carolina. And while governor of South Carolina, she did a couple of amazing things. And I'm going to give one really. She ensured that every state employee realized that their job was to work in the best interests of South Carolinians. So when you call an office, they are there to respond. And I'll tell you, that took hold. I live here now and I see it, and it's a very powerful influence to actually say, my government's here to support me, not take control of me. Government doesn't grant me power. Government protects my power and looks at my interests. So that's one thing that Nikki Haley did. There's another thing. When that young man went into the most, you know, longest historical black church in America and shot everybody, she went down and she managed that without any of the violence that came with the, and they basically didn't allow people like Al Sharpton or some of these other, you know, really negative influences that inspire hate. didn't allow them in, and neither did the community. And you know what? A very large Black population in South Carolina, and she really worked it well, and there are more and more Black conservatives coming out here. And of course, we've got Tim Scott, senator from South Carolina, Black conservative Republican, very influential guy. And then Nikki Haley also, she brought a tremendous amount of business and industry to South Carolina. The economy is roaring. People want to live here. They're coming from all over the Northeast. They're coming even from Florida. I just sold my house to a couple from Florida. Nikki Haley, very influential. On the downside, she has a little bit of that negative anti-Trump, you know, afraid of his personality and is afraid of being a little too bold. And she was pretty good in the UN, you know, when she was the ambassador to the UN. She was pretty bold.
You bet she was.
So I think she's a candidate. She's a good candidate. But I think, again, she made some comments that undermined Donald Trump after she left the UN position. And I think that would hurt her in the long run. I think she'd be a decent candidate out there, but I just don't believe that she would have the influence in order to overcome a Trump, run. But yeah, at the same time,
fair enough.
You know, Ted Cruz, a lot of these guys probably won't do it.
We got a little over 2 minutes left here. Let's kind of summarize what's going on the economy. I'm paying $6 a gallon for premium gas. I have to run premium gas in my car, and I have made the decision that I'm going to do that. I love my car, and there is no reason in the world that I'm going to, you know, get an electric car or what have you, because I really love my car. I saw milk for sale in Blaine, Little Blaine, Washington, $6.50 a quart. That's pretty darn high. I'm going to the grocery store and I'm seeing the price of oranges. I eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. The price of oranges has gone up probably 25% or thereabouts since I got on my health kick. Don't people understand how rotten our economy really is? I'd like you to elaborate on that. And why don't they get it?
Well, you know, maybe people in Washington don't, but people in South Carolina do. A lot of people around this country, farmers, they're having to pay tremendous prices just to get their materials and feed. It's costing a fortune. You've had tremendous problems with not only the supply chain issues, but just the inflation issues. The gas, the energy, everything is run by gas, oil, energy. That's going to have an impact, long-term impact. This administration, this regime, the Biden regime, continues to try to find someone else to blame and actually makes comments like it's a bizarre to blame me for inflation because of my, you know, printing $1.9 trillion.
Right.
You know, it's not having an oil policy and energy policy that actually stifles domestic energy.
Yep.
I mean, of course, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, it is totally ridiculous. You know, the comment that I would make right now in wrapping this thing up is to say that everything in our country is really going poorly. I don't really much care about the alternative sexual preferences of some people. That's not for me to judge. I will say I just don't understand it, but that's just a comment about Al Corlin. What I want to say here is that changes need to be made, you guys out there. Get active. We'll be back next week.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.